Let's Talk
it's
Legal.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
And again, those numbers, if you'd like to join us, 800-818-2255, 910 area code, fewer numbers to dial there, 353-4674, and the 252 area code of our listening audience, 247-7282. And Cecil, good morning.
Good morning, Lockwood. How are you?
Very well. Beautiful day.
Yes.
What a nice addition for voting. So.
Yep. Here we are. And it is election day.
Oh boy, busy day.
Lockwood. Today I think we'll talk about, and we'll probably continue this conversation next Tuesday, about trust. And trust is a word that just is a catch-all. It gets used oh so many times. And we really need to kind of demystify it and kind of talk about that word and exactly what it means. And Lockwood, what I mean by that is that there are so many different types of trust. And I want to go into detail about some of the different types of trust, but you always have to begin with the question, you know, what is the purpose of the trust? Do we need a trust at all? And what is the purpose of it? Now, one of the basic places always to start is just with the definition. And a trust, Lockwood, is an agreement. It is a contract between two persons, usually, or two entities, the grantor or the creator of the trust, and then his or her or its trustee. Okay? And then it is for the benefit, usually, of another. So a trust is a contract between two people, usually for the benefit of another. That's kind of the classic legal definition of a trust. A contract between two people, the grantor and the trustee, for the benefit of another, known as the beneficiary.
Or a third party.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, it is a written document. It is a contract, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in the format. It can be sometimes included in the last will and testament. It's right. Then known as a testamentary trust.
Okay.
Or it can be a freestanding trust. Okay. Just a contract, a trust agreement. Again, between the grantor, the creator of the trust, and the trustee. And it's just a contract signed by the grantor, signed by the trustee. And then, of course, it then has certain dispositive provisions within the trust document.
Now, how easy is it to either alter mm-hmm. or to dismantle a trust?
Well, that's a great question. There are probably two basic kinds of trust. One is revocable or revocable or modifiable or amendable.
Okay.
And then there is, of course, an irrevocable trust, which is a trust that supposedly is not amendable or modifiable. And so there are those two types of trust, right out of the gate, Lockwood. Of course, you know, we have revocable trust that then has language in the trust that makes it very difficult to amend it. And we have irrevocable trust that have language in the trust that allows it to be amended for certain purposes.
Okay.
So one really has to look deeper than just what the trust document on its face says that it is. Sometimes
wow.
a revocable trust speaks about and is called the revocable trust of Lockwood Phillips, and yet it has provisions in it that as to certain items, it cannot be revoked, even though it, of course, is called a revocable trust. And, of course, the same is true with an irrevocable trust. The most notable change, the most notable provision in an irrevocable trust that should be irrevocable but yet has a provision that allows the grantor to change the trustee.
Okay.
Which, of course, is an amendment or modification to the trust, even though it is irrevocable. So it's kind of interesting. Many, many clients come to the office, Lockwood, and of course the conversation begins. You review their factual situation, the family history, if you will, who their spouse happens to be, their prior spouse, right, if any, where the children are, in which marriage, if there's been more than one marriage, or maybe possibly there are no children at all. But you certainly get, you know, a family history for both the, for both folks that are in your office, usually the husband and the wife.
Mm-hmm.
After that, of course, you then begin to get a financial understanding of the client, some of the nature and extent of their holdings. Doesn't at this conference have to be precise, but you generally need, as a lawyer, need to get some understanding of the nature of their assets, the nature of their business, if any.
Right.
Do they have a closely held corporation, as we've talked about on the program? And then, of course, you listen carefully to the client to discern what their needs and objectives are. And so now here we go. You know, you might hear from a client, Lockwood, that they're young. They're in their 30s or 40s and their children are 9 and 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly we're going to need a trust to take care of those 9 and 10 year old children if for some reason mom and dad go on a vacation and have a tragedy and just,
right,
don't come back. So right there you have, a pretty fundamental kind of need for a trust for minor children. Another thing that you might hear from a child is that, no, their children are not minor. They have an adult child, 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, but that child has special needs. That child is handicapped in some way, either maybe physically or maybe they're mentally retarded, since handicapped,
right,
since birth or otherwise. Maybe they've been in an accident that caused some sort of physical disability. Potentially you hear from a client that their child is just simply, heard this one yesterday, their child just simply is not able to take care of money.
Right.
You know, Mr. Harvell, if I leave my daughter our inheritance within 3 months,
right,
it will all be,
right,
gone.
Right.
I cannot do that. I have to put it in some sort of way where she's going to get it over time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, what they're saying is, you know, Mr. Harvell, will you talk to me, please, about a trust?
Right.
Because that's what you would have to do in order to suspend the inheritance and give it to the child over a period of time. The vehicle, the mechanism that we would use would be a trust agreement. So right there you begin to see some of the kinds of trusts that we use. Trust for minor children, trust for handicap or children with special needs, trust for spendthrift children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You also then, of course, as I know our listeners understand, there's a whole category of trust that are for estate tax purposes.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, let's talk about the trust here very quickly,
mm-hmm,
related to a minor child.
Sure.
The parents set up a trust. They have they die. There's an unfortunate accident of some,
yes,
nature. So the children now are the recipients of the family's estate.
Correct.
The establishment of a trust in that particular case, does it somehow diminish the tax impact of that?
No. Not unless the trust has tax savings provisions within it. So if you have younger adults in your office who have minor children,
uh-huh,
and their estates are potentially taxable, okay, then you have two tiers. You've got two objectives for those folks, which is, one, to utilize a trust document that will mitigate or lessen the estate tax. And then secondly, once we've accomplished that through the use of certain provisions within the trust, there is then holdback trust for the minor children, for their college education, their orthodontics, their braces,
right, right,
their camps,
yeah, that's
all
what I'm
the
thinking.
Special
because
things that children need.
If the estate is taxed at,
yes,
the point of time of death,
right,
then the funds for that trust
or less.
Have diminished significantly. Yeah.
There's no estate tax exemption, my friend Lockwood, for minor children.
All right.
Okay. That one doesn't exist yet.
All right.
Okay.
We're listening. Good. I wanted to clarify that. We're listening to Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And to remind you, we're talking about Let's Talk Legal here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. If you'd like to call in with a question, you're welcome to do so. 910 area code 353-4674. 252 area code of our listening audience, 247-7282, and of course toll free 800-818-2255. And I'll give you the number to call their office if you have a question after the program. You're listening to Coastal Daybreak. We're chatting with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. The right advice at the right time. We're chatting about trusts.
We are.
And I concluded a moment ago. So basically, a trust is not necessarily at the outset just a means of avoiding taxes. I'm sure that there's a possibility of using a trust to do that. But a trust itself does not, by nature, eliminate tax liabilities.
No, not at all. Unless again, and kind of like the purpose of our program today and this week is to decipher and explain trust in a more full way. Unless the purpose of the trust, mm-hmm. again, is to mitigate tax, then it's not going to do that. I mean, the trust has to have certain tax sensitive provisions in it to then be able to utilize the tax code so as to mitigate estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your question was about, you know, the minor children.
Right.
We would first, with a client, if they have an estate tax issue, we would first, of course, address that in the document. And we would have the special provisions within the documents that allow their estates to mitigate or lessen the estate tax. Then, of course, after we've accomplished that, it would flow into a trust for the minor children.
Gotcha.
So that it would be there for them for their education and their needs as, of course, minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we've talked about this trust for minor children. We've talked about this trust for special needs, folks. We've alluded to the fact that certainly trusts are many times used for estate tax purposes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Trusts are also used, Lockwood, to protect assets. For instance, you know, folks who are needing to qualify for Medicaid. They are very concerned about losing their home place or their home property, their family home, their family farm. And so many times we utilize trust for purposes of asset protection or to protect property from certain creditors. And of course, Medicaid can be considered basically a creditor. So there's a trust right there that has nothing to do with a minor child, nothing to do with estate taxes, but the client comes in very concerned about their loved one. I had this just yesterday, concerned about his wife who has advanced dementia and is going to be going into, is going to need some skilled care.
Mm-hmm.
And he is concerned that they will lose their home. And so there is the utilization of a trust to hopefully protect the home place, okay, from any kind of Medicaid lien or Medicaid recovery, if she in fact then qualifies for Medicaid. So we're beginning to see that there are many different types of trust and different purposes, and it's all within the provisions of the trust. I'm trying to think, and Lockwood, you being kind of a lawyer but a non-lawyer, might help me here with an analogy. I mean, what's an analogy to this? There are things where there are many, it's all the same word, but it depends on the purpose for which one is using it.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, basically you're creating an instrument.
Yes.
That basically moves the asset from one responsibility to another and gives you the ability now to move it out of target area? And for all intents and purposes?
Well, that particular trust, the trust to protect the home from a Medicaid lien, is utilized for that purpose. So as to move the asset out of the name of this wife, who may very likely be receiving Medicaid benefits, and putting it in some sort of protective trust so that there will not be a lien placed on the home. So that is absolutely within, you know, the context of what you were referring to.
So you've got the same, if we're looking at the issue of trusts, we tend to come in and say, okay, I've got a trust for that. But you have to have a, there are so many different flavors, and if you will. You were looking for a good description. You've got, you've got so many different flavors of ice cream. And each has its different usage.
It does. It does. It very much does, Lockwood. And this is why it's so important to sit down with a good lawyer and lay your facts out and help the, and you help the lawyer together, the two of you, three of you, if you will, discern what the objectives and goals are for you and your family. And then have the lawyer tailor make the trust, if one is needed in your family, for the purpose for which draw the trust up that will, of course, achieve your objectives and goals. Now, again, speaking of a very recent client, he brought in a trust which is known in the industry as a charitable remainder trust.
Mm-hmm, right.
He already had that created. This gentleman. And that's a type of trust that's out there that this gentleman had created about 8 or 9 years ago.
And what is the purpose of a charitable?
Well, a charitable remainder trust is a trust where your assets go into a trust and you receive a dividend, if you will, or an annuity or a stipend off of those assets as long as you are living. And then, of course, when you die, the remainder of the assets in the trust, if any, pass on to the charity. That is a general definition of a charitable remainder trust. But this gentleman's wife is the one that I spoke about earlier, who has the wife that has advanced dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she is very soon going to be going into a facility. And his very logical comment to me was, but Cecil, you know, I have a trust. I have a trust. We will use the same trust that my charitable remainder trust to protect the home. Can we not use the trust that I already have prepared? And of course, unfortunately, we cannot, because the purpose, the provisions in the charitable remainder trust are different than the provisions that would be in a Medicaid protective trust.
Interesting. All right. You're listening, of course, to The Right Advice at the Right Time with Harvell and Collins. We're talking with Cecil Harvell. Let's talk legal. Boy, it's Tuesday. Let's talk legal here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
One of the things that I really want to get to before we run out of time this morning is that there's hardly a week that goes by, Lockwood, that I don't get have a conference where the client comes in and just says, I think I need a trust, Cecil, because I want to avoid probate.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I don't have a tax problem. I don't have a minor child. I don't have a child with special needs. I don't need to protect my home from a Medicaid lien.
Right.
I want a revocable trust, Cecil, to avoid probate. And of course, Lockwood, here I am as a lawyer who works in the area of trust and estates. And yet, you know, I then have to just take a big, deep breath and patience and say, and begin to say to that client, well, let's talk about this, Mr. Jones. You know, we might not really need a trust for that purpose. Because probate in the state of North Carolina, Lockwood, and particularly in eastern North Carolina, but also really throughout the whole state, is not an onerous and burdensome and cost and a cost-riddled procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Our probate laws are very streamlined in North Carolina. Many times you do not even need a lawyer to help you get through a fairly straightforward estate. Certainly an estate sometimes that is simple just between husband and wife.
Right.
And to set up a trust just to avoid probate is a bit of a question mark for most good trust and estates lawyers. So you really do need to have some more significant purpose other than just simply avoiding the probate.
All right. Our guest this morning, of course, Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. If you would like to get more information, give them a call, 252-826-9050.